Hello and welcome. This is another CIO live stream. We're back from the summer. It is my honor and privilege to be joining you from the global headquarters of the world's best capitalized bank, headquartered in the world's best capitalized country. We had August begin with a lot of volatility in markets. We've got a lot going on this fall. So we thought it'd be a good time to get together with some of our top market experts and talk about the market. So thank you for joining us either on our website or on the LinkedIn. We're going to be talking to Nadia, Leslie, and Dominic today. We'll start with Nadia on the U.S. markets. What the heck happened with the spike in volatility there?
Yes, Mark. Let's run through that. You know, the market volatility did spike quite a bit. The VIX rocketed multiple fold in early August. We saw a VIX spike intraday to over 60. I mean, that's the highest level that you've seen since the pandemic. And it's well above what we had been seeing, a pretty calm market early in the year where the VIX was hovering in the low to mid-teens, as you can see there on the slide. Within a matter of just a few days, the S&P 500 pulled back 7%, including that nearly 4% pullback that we saw intraday on August 5th on that Monday. And a lot of this was just due to concerns about a softer than expected July jobs report. And then also we had that knock-on effect of the unwinding of the popular yen carry trade. We're also in a month, I would say, of just seasonally low market liquidity just due to summer vacations. I'm sure some of us were on vacation during this time as well, and that helped to further exacerbate some of the moves that you're getting from systematic, those rule-based algorithm trading. We're seeing, just general increase in quantitative trading over the last decade. So has continued to add complexity to markets. We're also, I would say, Mark, at a stage in the economic cycle in the U.S. where markets are just particularly sensitive for data. You know, the market is trying to suss out if there are any signs of weakness and any sort of potential significant slowdown in the growth picture, just given how restrictive monetary policy has been. Remember, the Fed has been on hold for over a year. But the good news, though, Mark, as you can see in the next slide, is that the market has since recovered. The S&P has had a V-shaped type of recovery, and again, it's floating near new all-time highs. It's just now 1% or so off of its July 16 high. But Mark, I think the episode is just a reminder to all of us that, you know, market sentiment can shift very quickly. And that is sentiment on both sides. Whether you're talking about negative or positive sentiment that can feed on itself and not necessarily be grounded in fundamentals. This is why it's really important to have an investment framework and take a longer term perspective. It can really help avoid some of these knee-jerk reactions and decision-making, including exiting positions at the wrong time. But at the same time, it does allow for some level-headedness and having that shopping list always handy and ready to go to find those good longer-term opportunities on sales during, you know, these sort of periods of unjustified sell-off. And I would say early August provided one of those opportunities to really opportunistically put some dry powder, and we know there's been cash on the sideline, and putting that to work in the market because the market has since recovered. And those who did that really benefited.
All right. Thanks, Nadia. Well, you know, you listed and you went through a lot of the factors that were impacting markets. Another one, you know, right around the end of July, beginning of August, was a shift in the often looked at presidential polls and the leadership there. So a lot of people can't get enough of this U.S. election coverage. What's the market impact there? What's going on?
Well, if you can't get enough, get your popcorn ready and pull up a seat. There's a lot more to go, particularly as we approach the fall. We are now officially finally have the presidential candidates for the two major parties. The Democrats confirmed current President, Vice President Kamala Harris last week at its convention. you know, Biden, as we know, President Biden dropped out of the race about 5 weeks ago and passed the torch on to Harris. And she has been gaining in the polls, and she's better positioned than he was. And in the national polls, have actually slightly ahead of former President Trump. You know, just given the momentum that we're seeing in the polls and from her, as you can see on the slide, we have adjusted our election probabilities. I'll give a slight margin to Harris, about a 55% probability of her winning versus Trump at 45%. Our most likely scenario, though, is a 45% is Harris with a split Congress, that is a Republican Senate and a Democratic House. I would note and emphasize that things remain quite fluid and the race is still a very close call and things could shift one way or the other and in the polls as we approach election day. I think it's also important to remember, Mark, that polls have their own limitation in their predictive power. Let's not forget prior elections, particularly in the first election, the first Trump presidency. Now, in terms of how those shifting probabilities can affect markets, you know, as we have discussed earlier, the market attention has been more on, you know, the volatility in August has been more on economic growth, the labor market and monetary policy. But that attention could start to shift, particularly as we approach the fall. We typically see a pickup in volatility in September and October in election years. We'll get the first debate between Harris and Trump. That will be September 10th. And it's likely to dominate some of the headlines. This is a historic race in many accounts. The Trump and Biden debate, as you might remember, Mark, in late June, Biden's poor performance, some stocks associated with a beneficiary of a Trump victory momentarily started to outperform, you know, the likes of financials and some of those smaller domestic companies. But what we have seen more recently is that this Trump bump has largely faded. But we do think that the market could be most sensitive to a Trump victory or a Democratic sweep. Should either of these scenarios start to meaningfully gain in the polls, the market could have a reaction. So some of the things that we're watching, former President Trump continues to emphasize higher tariffs quite a bit, including that 10% universal tariff on the over $3 trillion of goods that come into the U.S. annually. And he's proposed at least a 60% tariff on the over $400 billion of goods that come in from China. I think it's important to remember that tariffs don't need congressional approval. The president can enact a lot of this through executive order. So these campaign proposals, should they become policy, they could be inflationary and they could be a drag on economic growth, and more importantly for the market, corporate profits, particularly for those companies that have supply chains overseas. And when you think about what some of those companies are, you know, they're the retailers, the, you know, semiconductors, the tech hardware companies, and some of the industrial companies as well. The other thing that we're watching, you know, a sweep by either party, so a Democrat sweep or Republican sweep, could potentially put its taxes front and center. Both parties will like to make changes, no surprise, to corporate taxes, but that requires congressional approval. You know, on one hand, we have Harris, who wants to lift the statutory corporate tax rate from currently 21% to 28%. And she also wants to increase the tax on buybacks from 1% up to 4%. These changes obviously would have a hit to corporate profits, and they could impact the magnitude of stock buyback programs, which are quite large in the U.S. Former President Trump, on the other hand, he wants to go in the opposite direction. What he wants to do is further reduce the statutory rate, probably 15 or even 20%. So right now, Mark, what we're seeing is a big tug of war when it comes to taxes, and that really adds another layer of complexity for companies, and that could create some volatility as the elections draw closer. But Mark, I'll end on this note. And, you know, we always say this and we continue to say this, you know, we advise investors not to lean too much in any one direction for any potential election outcomes, because things can change quite quickly, Mark.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, if you do get a divided government, that, of course, makes the economics much more prominent in what happens to the markets. All right, let's shift a little bit the gears. Let's go to Leslie. And, you know, Leslie, we hear talk of kind of being on track for a soft landing. We think that that's still the case. But what does that mean for fixed income here, since we've seen the rates come off some of the highs?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Nadia talked about some of the volatility that we're seeing earlier in the month, but, you know, some clarity or a lot of clarity that we had achieved was from Jackson Hole this past Friday. And, you know, as this chart shows, I think Powell was very adamant about mentioning that, you know, the job market is cooling, and he talked about the quit rates and, you know, job openings, you know, becoming lower. But he also talked about the fact that, you know, layoffs remain very, very low. And I think the important thing as well is that, you know, now the Fed is looking at more of the dual mandate and is definitely becoming more balanced. And when you think about a lot of those headwinds to fixed income, particularly in 22 and 23, was the price stability or the inflation component. But although we're not at the target, you know, we've made a lot of progress in terms of inflation. And as we look at that right-hand side of that chart, I mean, CPI is at around 3.2%. You know, it's had four straight months of decline. It's the lowest since April of 2021. So although we're not at the target, the fixed income market feels confident that, you know, the dual mandate is in play. And as the Fed does cut, you know, it's going to cut in a way of non-recessionary cuts, meaning it's normalizing, not due to some, you know, collapse in the economy.
You know, we recently changed some of our positioning in fixed income, kind of taking off our high grade bet. Can you walk people through that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. If you go to this next slide, I mean, you know, everyone in the fixed income market knows the past several years we've had a continuous reassessing and repricing of the Fed path, right? Because we know the fixed income markets are forward looking, the Fed is backward looking, right? So now that we have, you know, a very high probability, if not, you know, definite, that the Fed goes in September, and about a 25% chance that they go at a 50 basis point cut, the market once again has gotten a little bit of ahead of itself, in our opinion. You know, right now it's pricing in, you know, over 200 basis points of cuts through 2025, about 115 basis points of cuts in 2024 alone. You know, so these nine cuts that the market is already pricing in just seems a little bit over its skis. And the market has a tendency to do that, particularly when we look at things like, you know, the GDP now, which is, you know, for third quarter is about 2%. Although growth is slowing, or, you know, it's weaker, it's not weak. So the market's really getting ahead of itself, in our opinion, in terms of what it's pricing in. So it's not a bad time to actually take little chips off the table in terms of the most preferred on fixed income. Not to mention the fact that, you know, we've talked about this a lot, you know, term premium, you know, what an investor is compensated for going further out the curve versus staying in the short end. If you look at like the end of the week, particularly on Friday, the term premium is almost the lowest that we've seen this year. And although it is our view that the fiscal or the supply coming to the marketplace, you know, in the end of the quarter and particularly in 2025 will be secondary to things like growth, inflation, monetary policy, given the fact that term premium has once again contracted so much, you're really not being compensated enough right now. So again, the neutral view really has to do with the fact that the market's reassessed and it's repriced really for this, you know, Fed cutting cycle that's fairly aggressive, on top of the fact you're really not getting compensated for taking on a lot of interest rate risk.
So look, that's a pretty big change around the term premium. Where have the opportunities opened up?
Well, you know, when we think about it and we look at some of the other slides that I have, that if you think about where we are, like the next slide, you know, we've had, and Nadia mentioned this as well, I mean, the vol spike that we saw and the contraction that came in within credit spreads is still in existence. I mean, we know that credit spreads or fixed income spreads in general are not or don't offer necessarily a large relative value opportunity. However, if you go to the next slide, one of the things that we show, which is really important within fixed income, is that, you know, we look at where spreads are in terms of the past 20 years, and that's going to be, you know, on the right-hand side, and they're at a very low percentile. However, the yield that you're earning, and that's on the left-hand side, is actually very high level. And why this is important, because as we all know, when we look at the tailwind to total return, it's compounding income. So, and one of the most important things as well is while we have, you know, things like high yield, for example, at a 7.5% yield, that's the lowest yield that we've seen in several years. I mean, investment grade corporates are at 5%. They're not as high as they've been, you know, over the past 2 years, but over the longer term, particularly investment grade corporates still represent a lot of relative value, particularly when it comes to compounding income. And what we show on the right is how, like, things like investment grade corporates have returned versus cash. And as we know, you know, the yield curve has been inverted for the longest time in history, and it's been beneficial a lot of the times for investors to park their, you know, an over amount of cash within that short end. But now that we have the Fed likely cutting and you know, cutting, you know, probably consecutively, we think reinvestment rate risk is really going to be on the forefront. And now what we're seeing, like what that right-hand chart shows, is that things like investment-grade corporates are now outperforming cash. And we think that that's going to continue because we expect, you know, sort of a range-bound kind of environment as the Fed methodically cuts. But the carry that you're earning and that compounding income will far outweigh, you know, particularly when you look at the reinvestment risk within, like, say, a three-month T-bill.
All right, we're back to Nadia. And, you know, you talked a little bit about the importance of having a long-term view before, but maybe you can get a little further into that right now.
Absolutely, Mark. You know, that early August volatility was a reminder, an important one, to really have that investment plan and strategy that meet your longer-term financial goals. But that plan can be that grounding anchor, if you will, during volatile times, and really, again, help prevent those knee-jerk reactions. Historically, what we have seen, though, in these sharp market pullbacks, particularly ones that are not due to any sort of major deterioration in fundamentals, they tend to be followed by pretty strong recoveries, as you can see here on the slide. And that's what we have seen so far with the most recent one. I mean, just as a reminder, you know, as we've talked, like, while economic growth is slowing in the U.S., it continues to be our belief that the U.S. economy is on course for a soft landing, and the Fed is on the cusp of starting to cut interest rates, and we expect that to start in September, and that's going to help further ease financial conditions. At the same time, when you look at corporate fundamentals, which we spend a lot of time on, they remain in solid shape. I mean, look at the U.S. Second quarter earnings season. I mean, companies beat expectations. Profits grew at 11% for the quarter year over year. Forward guidance, for the most part, has been okay, down just a little bit, but roughly in line with sort of what you would expect with the historical patterns. So when we cross-check with these fundamentals, what we see, the magnitude of a pullback that we had a few weeks ago, we knew it was overdone. But this is a reminder how important also diversification is, because while equities were seeing that drawdown, you know, bonds rallied, as Leslie talked about earlier. So that helped dampen volatility and acted as an offset in a diversified and balanced portfolio, which, as we've shown before, over the longer term really tends to develop that positive return. So Mark, the lessons here are: stay grounded, avoid any sort of panic investment decisions, be longer term focused, and be diversified across asset class to help dampen some volatility in any sort of portfolio.
Yeah, I just hope that none of our clients were away at the beach and then came back to trade their portfolio and made some mistakes there in the beginning of August. I hope that you were at the beach and blissfully missed it and come back to a portfolio that's up. That I guess that's a little bit wishful thinking, but okay. So that's longer term. But as you know very well, when you talked a little bit about the volatility potential around the elections. On the other hand, if you avoid a recession and the Fed is cutting rates, that can be very good for stocks. So what are the tactical opportunities here?
Thanks, Mark. And I would say I was at the beach doing the volatility. And when I came back a week plus later, it wasn't in the news, I would have said, what pullback? Because the market rebounded so quickly. So hopefully our clients had a similar experience as well and didn't witness it firsthand. So in terms of your question, we continue to focus on quality companies. We advise, you know, fade in the rallies that we've seen in some low quality stocks, and we have seen some bouts of rallies around low quality names this year, and we would continue to fade those. As we have discussed before, quality companies can be found across almost every region, across every sector, and the elements that we're looking for when we speak about quality are really those companies with strong balance sheets, profitable companies, you know, and those companies that have good free cash flow generation, and companies as well that has those structural and secular growth drivers behind them to help drive revenue growth and really margin expansion opportunities. And when I think about some of those areas that really fit that bill, it includes companies that are exposed to some of those secular themes that we've been talking about, Mark. You know, think about artificial intelligence, energy transition, as well as healthcare longevity also has exposure to that. I would say in terms of, tech as a sector, we continue to like, it does have that quality tilt, as I alluded to, just given a higher percentage of recurring revenues. And we're also seeing the self-funding growth that's happening in that sector, particularly in AI. But I would be remiss if I didn't say we are mindful that, volatility in the sector could pick up in coming months. I mean, some of it is just due to potential geopolitical headwinds. If the U.S. implements additional export controls, like things advanced semiconductor chips and equipment, which the U.S. has done the last 2 years in October. So that could cause some volatility within the sector. So we want to be mindful of that. However, what we would also do is in that sort of pullback, if we do get that pullback, we use that again as a buying opportunity to continue to build that longer term exposure to some of these areas like AI. So we continue to favor those quality stocks, which cuts across many sectors, dominated of course by tech, but also healthcare, industrial, and I would say also mention financials, Mark, which is a sector that we recently upgraded to most preferred.
All right, thanks, Nadia. Now we're gonna turn to Dominic. Dominic, one of the things I think we pride ourselves on in the CIO office is not just looking at bonds and stocks. We look at, currencies. We look at alternatives. Lots of things. The U.S. dollar here, Fed cutting, growth slowing. What do we do?
Well, Mark, I would say in our base case, we do look for a mid-single-digit decline in the dollar on a broad basis. Now, that surprised, maybe a surprise to many of you, because the dollar has already weakened a bit in recent weeks. And if you think about the rate cut expectation, they're truly quite advanced. But I think it's worth maybe stepping a little bit back, looking at the bigger picture. And I think that's why I brought you some of these charts here. I mean, the valuation of the dollar is truly high. You can say versus a longer term average, we're 16% overvaluated or 17%. And we obviously also run some of the structural challenges, twin deficits. Now, some of the argument will be, well, do they matter actually? I would say normally they don't matter as long growth is here in the US quite nicely, as long as there's nice yields on the table, or growth outside the US is in poor conditions. Now, definitely growth outside the US is a little bit challenged, but we don't see a massive deterioration from here anymore. If at all, there might be a little bit of stabilization, a comeback. But if I look at the US, what's happening, yeah, well, we should see slower growth and we should have less yield on the table. And if you look at just the same chart that I brought you here on the left side, on the right side, where you basically see the deviation from longer term average and you look at the carry that the US dollar is offering you, you find ourselves in a very corner to the right. And I do think it's great right now, but obviously as the carry starts to come down in the US, I would say versus its trading partners, you should see a weaker dollar on a broad basis. Now, what can you do? I mean, obviously hedge your dollar exposure. I think that's one way to go about, and maybe for dollar investor looking for alternatives, if you're a little bit more pro-growth, then I would think about something like the pound or Australia. Both economies actually could do actually quite well. There's plenty of stimulus in Australia and they haven't really hiked much. So there's no rate cut on the table, at least I would say towards the end of the year and early next year. And then also, the economy in the UK has surprised to the upside. That means the rate cutting path is less certain. And I think with, a decent yield, you're going to see some outperformance of the pound as well. If you're more conservative, I think the idea must be more of the Swiss franc safe haven currency. Although we have done a fair bit already in terms of appreciation, I think there's more in store for those who look for safety and think about the period ahead is truly going to be probably has a little bit more volatility as we have seen already in August this year.
Okay. Well, thank you for the FX view. Now, another little bit outside the box thing that you cover and have covered for some time is gold and other commodities. So gold has been a real shiner here. What's the outlook from here?
Well, we're actually still quite positive on gold. Our end target is $2,750 an ounce. And I think the underlying thinking is quite clear. Number one, I mean, there is quite some strong demand from central bank. And I think we need to recognize that element. Central banks are likely to buy around 950 tons this year. They bought a little bit more in the last 2 years, probably around 1,100 tons each year, but there's still robust central bank buying. And that's compared to, let's say, a longer term average, which is around 500 tons. So you have that kind of hoovering up from central banks. And as you just heard from myself, from my end, well, we do have a little bit of a weaker dollar. Opportunities costs are going down for holding gold. That should also entice a little bit stronger ETF demand. And we have seen a turnaround in ETF purchases across the board. So it's not just centered in one region. And we do think as we progress, that kind of demand will strengthen. And with a weaker dollar, and the linkage is quite negatively correlated here, dollar and gold, you should see a higher gold price. Now, what is for me important, a lot of people, I bought gold because of a hedge against equities. Look, in the short term, gold is not necessarily the best hedge. And I wanted to bring you this here in the chart. You see here the linkage between gold and equities. It's definitely not stable. It's sometimes positive, sometimes negative. Yep, gold clearly protected you in these big drawdowns, GFC that we have seen and other periods. But in the shorter term, probably 10 years, the better hedge that you look at. That doesn't mean gold doesn't add any value. The average correlation is low. So there is a diversification benefit to be had. And if I would look back the last 50 years, well, I would say if I take 5-year windows, I would have an 80% probability of gold adding some value to the portfolio. So structural factors, cyclical consideration, and this portfolio angle clearly makes gold a valid place in a portfolio. Now, you also asked me about what about the rest of the commodities? And I just wanted to show you what our bottom-up forecasts imply, basically an appreciation in the low teens to mid-teens, thereabout, really broad-based. That view comes out of several factors. Number one, we still think oil prices have a chance to go higher. I think OPEC is well placed to manage the oil price or the supply availability. And there are some challenges in the Middle East. And I think that should add nicely to an upside potential. When we think about the base metals, we still have copper, for example, where there's a structural supply and demand story. Clearly short-term cyclical headwinds a little bit, but if you look a little bit beyond the short-term concerns, I think there's a great story to be had with double-digit upside potential. And if I think about, or we talked about precious metal here, where gold is the main factor, and then you also have agriculture prices, which have come down quite a fair bit, so there's not much downside, and a little bit of weather uncertainty coming in, you're going to see quickly prices going up. So thinking about a broad commodity engagement, low to mid single digit return outlook over the next 12 months is, I think, a good expectation. And with a vol of 10 to 15, I think that's an interesting risk reward to hold for somebody that thinks about diversifying your portfolio return.
All right. Well, thanks, Dominic. I think this is a tremendous time for people to think about diversification with all the things going on in the world. Maybe we have just time for one question. Leslie, one good thing is that mortgage rates are coming down in the United States. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I mean, the mortgage rate's been coming down. It's lowest it's been in quite some time. And, you know, while we want to keep hopeful that it'll have some, you know, reviving the housing market, you know, as we all know, you know, the effective mortgage rate that most consumers have locked in at is about a 3.9%. You know, with that said, you know, the monthly payment that consumers are experiencing right now is some of the lowest that we've seen, say, in a past year, but it's still relatively high. So in other words, it's a positive factor, but we have a long way to go. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, the market's going to be looking for, particularly when you think about The concern over inflation will be any kind of reacceleration in things like home price appreciation, things like that, because of the lower mortgage rate. But with that said, Mark, it has a long way to go before you really get a meaningful impact, given that most consumers locked in at a much lower rate.
Okay, we're out of time, but I'd be remiss if I didn't address a little bit. So we've gotten a lot of questions. Of course, we mentioned anything about the election and corporate taxes. There's a lot of questions coming in about personal taxes and what might change given the various candidates. I think at this point, especially before Labor Day and you know, when the polls are very close or the election seems very close, the best thing we could say, it's probably the same thing we would say after Labor Day, is there probably will be some changes to the tax situation. So this is a great time for U.S.-based clients to talk to their U.S.-based advisors and look at some of the things that they can do to make sure they have they're prepared for the tax scenarios that could play out. So we are out of time. I want to thank everybody for joining us. I want to thank our cavalcade of stars, and we look forward to doing this again. Thank you.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.